You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and We Saw the Devil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. All right, Brittany, as I said before in a previous episode, I have felt naked and afraid without having you here to talk about Vallow.
Well, that's what I'm here for. So put those clothes back on and start feeling confident again.
I'm excited. Because of the reception of the episode that we did with the dramatic reading of Chad Daybell's pathetic attempt at erotica, you actually have another surprise for everyone today.
Oh, absolutely. Guys, this is kind of a big deal, but we have intercepted a love letter between Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow. So we'll be sharing that at the end of this episode.
It came right to us.
It came directly. It actually came from us to us. Yes. That's the craziest thing.
It's amazing. USPS these days.
It's brilliant. In fact, I have a feeling we might see more of these in the near future.
Yes, I'm excited.
We've got a lot we need to catch up on.
Yes, we do. We actually have not done a proper, full news update on the Vallow case. Guys, I don't know what happened, but it was 31 gigs or something of documents, a massive document dump. A lot of legal documents, got the video interviews alone, the police interviews with everyone. And Brittany and I both watched them, and we had planned to do an episode and going through all of it. But the news cycle has been so crazy over the last month and a half.
Well, and not just that, but between all of these dumps, keep in mind the trial itself is still kind of underway. We've got motion after motion, sealed hearing after sealed hearing. We're still trying to see when, where, and what is going to happen. And so it just feels like there's a million different things happening at once. So let's at least unpack the most recent thing.
And this one could have some really interesting repercussions as far as for the trial, but mostly
big time.
I send this to Brittany all the time, but Marie Kondo, and when she says, I love mess. Well, I love mess. Yes. And this is becoming so messy, especially as of last week. So let's get into it, guys. And we're discussing the situation regarding Lori Vallow. Apparently, in the mental health facility in Idaho, it has been reported that allegedly an employee, a clinician, a therapist from that facility, spoke with Lori Vallow and gave her very specific homework. And that homework was to contact a law firm counsel for the LDS Church.
Correct.
Mind blown when I heard that. Apparently, Lori Vallow did do this. It was considered homework for the week for some reason. And then she ended up discussing it and telling Mark Means what happened in one of their phone calls or visits. And Mark Means is a little perturbed, you guys.
A little bit. I think that is very fair to say.
Yes. So Mark Means got a little pissy, understandably, and he filed a motion on October 27th, hey, stop the bus. We need to take a look at this. We need to get to the bottom of this. This is not okay. Everyone has been talking about that on social media platforms over the last week. Well, 2 days ago, guys, on Friday, John Pryor piggybacked and filed a motion as well, a motion for discovery. He, too, is they're co-defendants. They're being tried. So this is also going to affect my client. And he doubled down and also filed a motion for discovery. And we're actually going to go through this motion of discovery, break it down. What does it mean? What could the implications be? And yeah, how blown is your mind, Brittany, that this even happened to begin with?
All of it is so crazy because it just seems like if there was anyone that should know better, it should have been literally all of the people involved, right? The caretaker in this mental health facility, the lawyer at the church that was called should have known better. Prosecution even, right? It's alleged that Rob Wood was privy to this phone call before either attorney for Chad or Lori, which kind of also seems not entirely above board either.
it's very suspect. It's not normal. Like, let's just say that. Like, it's not something normal. And we'll get into the nitty gritty of it. But, you know, keep all of this in mind, guys. This is a death penalty case. But let's talk about John Pryor's motion for discovery. So in his motion for discovery filed on 11-5, he basically breaks it down into the following points. He made a motion for the state to disclose communications, including but not limited to Brady violations disclosures. Also motion for criminal depositions, motion for out-of-state subpoenas, and motion to disqualify Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. Also any further relief as discovered through all of the, you know, the above, motion production disclosures as become evident in the process. So he wants basically everything, everything disclosed and put on the table to get to the bottom of this.
And he explains why he feels like it's not just needed, but beyond necessary. And I think he does a really good job of explaining that.
I agree with him wholeheartedly, actually. And I know that John Pryor himself is kind of a piece of excrement. However, he's not wrong about any of this, guys. He's completely right. So let's break down the motion. It's like a 23-page document, and let's just break it down and discuss that.
Okay.
So he starts out, and he says that because the state, so Rob Wood and team, since the state has elected to seek the death penalty, heightened standards of due process and reliability apply to every single stage of the proceedings. Basically, everything needs to be transparent, everything needs to be out in the open, and there needs to be very, very, very close oversight.
Makes sense.
Right? It's a death penalty case. Someone's life is on the line here. In this case, potentially two. So he said, quote, because Mrs. Vallow and Mr. Daybell have been charged together as co-defendants, the state's exploitation of Miss Vallow while incompetent and in state custody also implicates Mr. Daybell's rights to due process, fair trial, and effective assistance of counsel. Because don't forget, if Lori Vallow spoke, since they're co-defendants, if she spoke to the LDS Church, a different counsel, this could very well impact Chad Daybell as well.
And just to kind of go back to that as to why the cases are joined, this has been kind of funny because over the last few months, it seems like both the prosecution and the defense for both Lori and Chad seem to kind of like flip-flop as to whether they want them to be joined or not. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, the temperature is John Pryor wants them to continue to be joined because it gives him more time while Lori's still crazy and locked up. So it's working in his interest to have everything kind of stayed because they're co-defendants. Whereas the prosecution, they kind of want to like move forward. They're trying really hard to get Chad moving along because he's still good, even if Lori's not. But this is going to be very interesting to see. How is this going to proceed if Lori continues to be found incompetent?
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. And Pryor is calling for a full discovery into this. And some of the things that he believes should be investigated include the following. How the situation came to pass. How in the hell did we get here?
How a quick what the fuck.
A quick what the fuck, guys. How a state hospital employee knew that an attorney in private practice in Utah served as legal counsel for the LDS Church. Why said state hospital employee believe that an attorney who represents the LDS Church would have any interest in this case? What conversations occurred between whom, the substance of those conversations, how and when the prosecution determined it did not have an obligation to inform the court or undersigned counsel of this extraordinary event, how the seemingly unaffiliated attorney in Utah was able to contact and speak with Rob Wood following his direct conversation with Lori Vallow, as well as what other communications have occurred between the prosecuting attorneys, say Rob Wood, Lindsay Blake, and members or leaders of the LDS Church regarding this case. Like, was it just, you know, Lori to the LDS law firm to Rob Wood, or have Rob Wood, Lindsay Blake, and other members of their team been more deeply involved with the LDS Church regarding Lori Vallow's case? Mm-hmm. Also, what kind of communications have happened between, say, the state, you know, the prosecution team, as well as state hospital employees? Have any actions been taken by the prosecution because of that conversation? So it's crazy. He's asking basically, again, a giant WTF.
Yeah. And the thing that's, I think, really stands out in this, too, is if you go back to the actual accusation, right? None of this has been proven yet. We don't have a lot of facts. And the point of all this is to figure out what are the facts. Mm-hmm. But one of the alleged pieces is that this church attorney that spoke with Lori had basically said something along the lines of, oh, we know everything about this case. Mm-hmm. So that's why John Pryor is trying to understand the full scope of how involved, how knowledgeable, and has this influenced anything.
Exactly. It's true. And I don't blame him at one bit. I frankly do not when the stakes are this high.
Exactly.
One thing, just side note, that I noticed in this document and found it very interesting is that Lori Vallow is referenced in this document as Miss Lori Vallow.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's always been kind of like this back and forth of Ms. Vallow, Ms. Daybell, and now Mrs. It seems to kind of be all over the place.
It's really weird because, guys, don't forget that back in March, Mark Means filed a motion to insist that all legal documentation, as well as when the judge, you know, refers to or speaks to her as Mrs. Daybell. And we discussed that in depth when that happened, as far as Lori Vallow, you know, proverbially like hitching her trailer to Chad Daybell and being like, nope, we're going down together, dude.
It totally feels that way. Like if there's like been a theme between Mark Means and John Pryor, it's that John Pryor is like, no. Like we work near each other, bro. But like, this is my strategy. My client just happens to be related to yours.
Yeah.
And then Mark Means is like, no, we're family. Like,
yep. He's like, no.
I don't want to sit at the kids' table. I want to sit with you guys.
Yeah. It's been the theme like through this entire process so far. And nope, now it's Miss Lori Vallow. So we're apparently back here, guys.
Oh, man. Lots of names to memorize. Yeah. And then on top of that, we have all these new nicknames, too, coming out with these document dumps. Yeah,
God. So, guys, if this happened, as Mark Means originally reported it in his filing, in his motion, it could be a huge issue. You know, the therapist at the heart of this, referenced as NS by the initials NS, obviously should have put up a pretty firm boundary and been like, we can't have any involvement, even just giving advice, especially legal advice on Lori's legal battles. But if it
did... Why were they even watching her trial as like
together?
Yeah, like why would that even be a wholesome activity to do in a mental institution?
Watch Chad Daybell? Yeah. How and why?
How is that healthy?
I mean, I guess she has the right since it does impact her case, but I don't know. It's bizarre. Idaho, as of 2017 at least, is 23% LDS as a whole. And it's number 3 of the states with the highest population of LDS members. And that's only after Utah being number 1, California being number 2. Eastern Idaho is like completely solidly LDS. So yeah. Keep that in mind as far as the church and probably most of the employees, most are probably also LDS there.
I'd say at least a good majority in the Idaho Falls area. Mm-hmm. Lori, I believe, is being held in Blackfoot. So it's further south. It's a little bit smaller, but it's probably fair to say that there's at least a good majority. And we can naturally assume that the caretaker that told her, hey, call this attorney instead. I think it's absolutely fair to speculate that that was a member of the church.
I am not a member of the church. And let's just say that I happen to be this random clinician working at this mental health hospital with Lori. I would never in a million years be like, reach out to this law firm. Basically serves as the church's official counsel, legal counsel. Yeah. No way in hell. That person absolutely is LDS.
Mm-hmm. So, and when you're Mormon, there's definitely some services that you are aware of that kind of come standard with your membership, if you will.
And I see a lot of discussion about this topic online, guys. I mean, arguments, and some of them have really been pretty nasty between people who are accusing the church of inserting itself. They go up against people who say that, well, the church didn't really get directly involved. So no, they have nothing to do with this. They never got involved. No harm was done. Here's the thing, though, is that we don't know. And we may actually never know the true nature or intentions of Lori Vallow's therapist. We simply may never know. And honestly, it doesn't even really matter because the waters have already been muddied. But the fact is if the therapist is LDS, which as Brittany even just said, likely, you know, possibly most likely could be, it is possible that they were looking out for the interests of the church over the patient. That would mean that it's unethical and that therapist should frankly be fired. But like, regardless, in any case, the therapist is a state employee. And one of the most powerful pieces in that motion, in the first portion of this motion, is that John Pryor points out, quote, broad discovery is also appropriate due to the magnitude of the allegations. It is unquestionable that state hospital employee entrusted with caring for an incompetent defendant is a government actor. He then cited precedent in another court case that basically it was ruled that mental health care workers in a state hospital, when dealing with, say, inmates or someone in trial, are considered government actors. And government actors cannot meddle with trials, cases, and legal things. So
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see how anyone could disagree with that whatsoever.
It's not that John Pryor is alleging that this happened, right? He's not actually alleging anything at this point. All he's saying is, let's look at all of the following things to make sure that this can still be a totally fair and impartial trial, despite this obvious mistake that's been made, whether that was the clinician or the church's attorney or the communication that happened after the fact. He's just simply saying we have to acknowledge and look at the full picture here. So this is everything that John Pryor is asking for, and it's a doozy. Okay, so first, notes in their original form. He said this like verbatim. In their original form taken by Rob Wood during or after his conversation with Mr. Daniel McConkie. That's the church attorney's name, by the way. Side note. I don't know about you, but like when I take notes for work, I have like doodles and I'll like write weird stuff on. So help me God, if anyone ever asks for like the original notes of anything I've done.
I really hope that it has a penis on it. That Rob was sitting at his desk taking.
I don't draw penises, no.
I hope that like when this eventually comes out, that like Rob Wood just has like little squiggles, you know, that we used to make in middle school, and then also dicks.
That, or like he's like drawing himself, like just like taking a dump on Mark Means or something. Like, I don't know. maybe we'll draw it up. We'll mock it up for you guys.
Oh my God.
Okay, so that's the first thing. He wants notes in their original form. Two, any recordings made of any phone calls or conversations relating to this matter. So that could be the recording of the actual hospital. That could be a recording that McConkie made, the law firm down in Utah, the church's law firm. This could also be the recording that took place on site at the prosecution's office, if they have a recording of any of that conversation. So I hope we get recordings.
I do too. And question for you, does anyone know, or Brittany, do you know if Lori's sessions are recorded?
I don't know for sure, but if you remember in that list of things that Mark Means wanted to have happen, saying, this is what I will need to trust Lori being at this hospital. I believe one of those items was he wanted full transparency on all communication that she has. So I think as long as his terms are being followed, there would be a recording of this.
There should be.
But we've now seen that kind of they didn't really follow a lot of the rules. So who knows?
Oh, this is a mess. Continue.
More mess. Okay, so item three, a list containing date, time, and subject matter of any and all phone calls, video calls, in-person conversations, which included any member of the prosecution team and any person employed or contracting with Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, including but not limited to the employee named N.S., list of all parties to each, and the length of each call or conversation. So he just wants the phone records. Number four, a list containing date, time, subject matter of any and all phone calls, video calls, or in-person conversations with any member of the prosecution team and Mr. McConkie. List of parties on each, length of each call, copy of each phone record of the prosecution, showing the date and time of each call. So again, he wants them phone records.
Big time.
Now he gets into text messages. So he wants the text messages, phone records, internal text messaging, phone calls, and records between Idaho Department of Health and Welfare to Mr. McConkie, to the prosecution team. He wants those text messages as well.
There has to be some.
Yeah, absolutely. Number six, any and all emails relating to any aspect of this matter, including internal emails between the prosecution team, emails to or from agents of the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, and emails to or from Mr. McConkie, and emails to or from the prosecution, and any member of Ms. Vowell's legal team. Think about the emails that you send your coworkers on like a project. You're like, ugh, this again, this client's the worst, or like, you know, things like that. I'm assuming they have the equivalent of like Slack channels and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm so excited. I'm really excited to see the emails involved. So this will be interesting to see all of the conversations. Piggybacking on that, John Pryor then lists he wants any voicemails. So he just wants everything. Item number 8, he gets into any notes generated during any meetings or within or after between the prosecution's office, Madison County prosecutor's office, or any prosecutor affiliated with the case when they've been discussing it. Now, that one kind of seems like a reach, but if it comes up that these emails are talking about, hey, I got a phone call from this blah, 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 well, you might have just opened up Pandora's box and I guess collusion. I haven't heard that word in a couple months.
Right.
But
we're due.
I think we might have the beginnings of like John Pryor insinuating that there's been some collusion that's taken place.
Whether that's valid is another story entirely, but like I can see how that would launch him into going in that direction.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, any notes generated from, during, between these different counties' prosecution teams. Now we have number 9 on the list. Any phone records, reports, incident logs, disciplinary paperwork, basically anything from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. This will be key for understanding what was Lori actually told to do. Where she's incompetent, it's going to be very important that records were kept as to what was she actually told to do. Was she directed to do these different things? So he wants the actual notes from the hospital. Text messages, emails, written materials between the clinician at the hospital, NS, and any other person, any of their coworkers, where they've spoken about Chad or Lori. I think that's really important. Number 11, text messages between this employee, NS, and any person in the prosecutor's office. He wants to know if this person has been actually speaking directly with prosecutors, whether that's in Fremont County or Madison County or any prosecutor affiliated with the case. Specifically, though, when speaking about Chad or Lori.
Can you imagine if it comes out that that clinician or someone within Idaho Department of Health and Welfare has been speaking directly to Rob Wood?
That would be horrible. But also at the same time, I kind of assumed that whoever would be overseeing Lori and Blackfoot, the chance of them hearing about the case is pretty high anyways. I legit expected months ago to see like some sort of leaked information from employees there. So yes, so far this like hasn't happened yet. I wonder if we're going to get a treasure trove of information soon.
I hope so. I love mess.
Okay, so number 12, a list of the trainings attended by all members of the prosecution team on this case within the past few years. That one really confused me. What did you make of that?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. Are they trying to link? Would it be possible if, say, this clinician in S could have crossed paths with Rob Wood in some way? I think back to an episode that we did previously with Anita, the blood specialist, splatter specialist, and she constantly holds basically workshops, and Jose Baez attended hers.
Crazy.
Yeah. So like apparently, you know, prosecutors go to things like this for educational purposes. So that was where my mind went, is a list of trainings. Could they have crossed paths with anyone who works at that facility?
So are they possibly also insinuating that the prosecution team isn't qualified? Maybe they didn't have the proper trainings to know how to go about handling these things? Or is it simply, do you think, just to see, could they have, you know, run into anyone?
I'm leaning towards running into anyone. I can't imagine that it would make a difference if Rob Wood has had any sort of training on mental health. I mean, as long as he's not calling himself and being like, hey. So again, my mind completely turns towards just like, has anyone from the prosecution team crossed paths with anyone in that healthcare facility at a training somewhere?
Well, keep in mind, too, that if we're talking about capabilities, this wouldn't be the first time that John Pryor or Mark Means have tried getting Rob Wood off the case. So if they're trying to indicate that maybe someone isn't competent enough, they haven't attended necessary trainings, this might be another way of trying to get Rob Wood off the case.
That's true. I mean, and I will be the first person, like, Rob Wood tiptoed right up to the line with Summer Shiflett mm-hmm. in his conversation. Yeah. I mean, he strategically went right up to that line, tap danced like right on the edge of it. I mean, you know, everything he did was above board, but he came really close to impropriety.
Totally. And I think it's fair to say that if the allegations that Mark Means has thrown out are actually true, like this actually all happened, I don't know how Rob Wood's going to be able to stay on the case and be impartial to information that he was not supposed to be privy to in the first place.
No, exactly.
So we will see. So number 13 on the list of things that John Pryor wants: state or district level policies regarding the prosecution's communications with Idaho Department of Health and Welfare employees. So just kind of understanding what is supposed to happen and what isn't.
He wants to nail them.
Yes. Number 14, what are the policies and procedures that the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare have in terms of homework? Is it normal to give homework to someone to be like, hey, shop for a new attorney? Like, is that normal?
And contact the church.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then going right into number 15, is it normal for Idaho Department of Health and Welfare to connect patients to outside parties? Is that appropriate behavior? Is that within the policies and procedures?
I cannot imagine that it is. Obviously, I don't know. My opinion means nothing, but like, I cannot imagine it would be.
In my head, I thought like homework would be like, let's try coloring something happy. Like, let's color a picture of your family. And then they're like, kind of, you know, just kidding. Let's maybe color a picture of something else. Yeah. Obviously, this is number 16, a log of all calls in which Miss Ballow was a party, including incoming and outgoing calls. Ooh, I wonder if we'll get some Chad Daybell calls in there.
Wonder if we'll get Chad Daybell calls. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, like, who at this point does Lori have to talk to? Like, is anyone on her side or supporting her in any way at this point?
No kidding. So that will be interesting to see a log of who's been calling her. I imagine that John Pryor will continue to try and make everything public. That's kind of his thing. So that will be really fun to see who has been chatting with her. And the very last item on his list, number 17, a log of all disclosures regarding this matter made by any prosecutor or any other person involved in law enforcement agencies to any media outlet or journalist, including specific details about who made the disclosure, what was disclosed, and the substance of the disclosure.
So vague, and honestly, I don't see that one happening in any way. Like, if some of these happen, that one's definitely not going to happen.
So, to summarize that last one, he wants to know anytime anyone in the prosecutor's office or any law enforcement position has spoken with a media outlet.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Like, some of them I think are a stretch, but some of them I think he's spot on for asking for. John Pryor wants all this. He actually explains, like, the reasons why he's being so extensive with his list is because he's trying to remind the prosecution that their job isn't supposed to be to execute Chad Daybell. Their number one job is to actually get a fair trial and get justice for both the defendant and the victims. So John Pryor is calling for the prosecution team to turn over any materials that would actually help his client, and I guess mm-hmm. Lori as well, to make sure that they get that fair trial. Mm-hmm.
I completely agree with him, especially with this. Like, we don't know what is happening. And in this motion, John Pryor repeatedly states, you know, not only should this be the function of law, right, in this country, but we're in a death penalty case. Like, if ever there was a time to be completely transparent and above board, it's this.
Right. And he even goes a step further, and I actually really respect this decision. John Pryor's not necessarily asking for all this to be delivered to him specifically to figure all this out. He says he wants a special prosecutor appointed to it, someone that could be a little bit more impartial than even him, so that they can review all of this. They can call witnesses. And he suggests the following witnesses. That would include the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare staff member, NS, Mr. Daniel McConkie, who would be the lawyer that is affiliated with the LDS Church, and prosecutor Rob Wood. In his opinion, he feels that this hearing would be necessary to understand the full extent and circumstances of any misconduct regarding these conversations. examining these witnesses under oath, he says, would not only be imperative, but there are serious questions as to how and why state hospital employees knew that this lawyer in Utah who represents the church in legal matters, why was she the one that directed Miss Vallow to speak with him? And equally important, how and why a lawyer in a private practice in a completely different state mm-hmm. was able to then contact Rob Wood.
Yeah.
So he's really just trying to understand the full scope of this. Mm-hmm. He asks specifically that not only does he want this special prosecutor, but he would also like this special prosecutor not to have anything to do with Fremont or Madison County offices, right? For inherent bias.
Fair.
But even more so, he doesn't even want them to even be members of the LDS Church. He wants the most impartial person to come in here and figure out the mess.
Completely agree with him. Wholeheartedly. 100%.
So just to recap that massive list, John Pryor wants literally everything, all materials. He wants it to be analyzed by someone who's entirely impartial, but who can also call these witnesses and really get to the bottom of it. He wants to sequester the witnesses, make it so they're not trying to, like, I guess, talk and figure out their story. And he wants to prevent further public statements from the prosecution concerning this, especially since they would be witnesses. Public information in this case has been so weird. Like, Mark Means likes everything sealed. John Pryor likes it public. And the prosecution is, like, all over the place. So
it has been really weird, like, how different all of them, you know, want things to be. I do appreciate John Pryor's approach of this, of that he wants everything out in the public and in the open.
Yeah. And in fact, he actually reiterates this in the biggest part of the whole thing is he says he would like the court to deny any request by the state to seal documents or hearings related to this matter unless secrecy is specifically requested by the defense counsel. And he says that's to preserve the defendant's Sixth Amendment rights for due process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically him saying, yeah, the prosecution shouldn't get a say in whether something's public or not. Like, that's up to the person who's on trial. If they think it's in their best interest for the public to be aware of what's been going on, that's their call to make.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I fully agree with him. I fully agree, because especially in a case this public, this large, that involves this many people at this point, like, everything should be above board.
Yeah, absolutely. And we still have some open-ended questions as to how is this trial even going to look going forward?
We don't even know.
What do you know about that?
Nothing. Nothing. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I have no idea. Well, guys, if you recall, the change of venue hearing was last month. What I just realized that a few days before the hearing, Rob Wood and the prosecution team tried to slip in a really quiet, fast request that the jurors be brought in to Eastern Idaho for the trial, not moving the trial as a whole. And I was like, what? That makes no sense whatsoever. John Pryor was blindsided and was like, I need some more time to think about this and kind of get my ducks in a row before I even think about that. So at the hearing, though, Judge Stephen Boyce approved the motion by Pryor to move the trial out of Eastern Idaho so that obviously Chad Daybell could receive a fair trial, right? The Idaho Supreme Court approved that decision to move the trial to Ada County. And Ada County, guys, is the most populous in Idaho. For those of you who don't know, Boise is its largest city. And that would make sense, right? Like, that's what we all knew was going to happen. And I don't think anyone really complained about that, because I think everyone just anticipated that to begin with. We all knew it was bound to happen. But apparently, Rob Wood and Lindsay Blake are not on board, and they're still displeased with this decision. And they would actually like to have another hearing to show how moving the trial the 300 and some odd miles away would cause, quote, significant financial and logistical strain on both Fremont and Madison counties. Like, it's too expensive to move the trial all the way, you know, 300 and some odd miles to what I assume would be Boise.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to complain about, right? Death penalty cases are notoriously expensive, and I'm sure there has been millions of dollars worth of man hours put into this investigation already, mm-hmm. not even counting what the prosecution's been up to this whole time, right? Like, just the investigation aspect, I'm sure, has been millions of dollars.
And this investigation has now spanned, what, Hawaii, Arizona, California, Idaho, Utah.
Like, and we're learning more. Kansas, right? Because she went, they've been everywhere.
Missouri? So, she was in Missouri?
Right, yeah.
Like,
so, I mean, for them to be like, this last little bit is expensive. Well, the executing someone is expensive. Yeah, of course, the trial is going to be expensive. It now seems like a very weird time to bring up how expensive everything is.
I know. And, you know, guys, I've been very open about my beliefs on the death penalty. I think that that should, I do not believe in the death penalty. I think that if we do utilize the death penalty in this country, that it should be reserved for just exceptionally heinous cases. And that's not to say the murder of two children is not exceptionally heinous, but I just don't believe that it should be utilized in situations like these. But,
and I'm of a differing opinion. Mm-hmm. I think that's partly because, again, like, I think in general, that's one of the most severe punishments you can give. I think it's poetic justice in this particular case. So I'm all for death penalty. I know how expensive this is. Mm-hmm. I pay my taxes here. I'm happy to double down on my taxes if it means we get to... Can we vote on the type of penalty we can give? Can we bring hanging back? Like, I am so pro death penalty specifically for Chad and Lori that it's like stupid.
Yeah, completely other camp. I can't.
Yeah.
Can't do it. They are awful. Do not get me wrong. I would just they're terrible humans. Do they deserve the air to breathe? No, but like, I just don't believe we should have that right as a human being. However, comma, I do have to find beautiful irony in Lindsay Blake and Rob Wood being like, man, it's too expensive.
It's very expensive.
Like, really, yeah. Guys, you're literally advocating for putting someone to death, which, ethics aside, like, is one of the most expensive things ever. Because not only do we have the trial, you know, all the investigation, the trial, you have years of appeals. The appeals alone are going to cost you tenfold of what we have seen so far, you know, like,
right,
it's just asinine. So I actually had a little chuckle.
I think that's why it's my frustration that they're complaining about it now, is it's like, hey, now, no, we want a death penalty, now see it through, like, don't you know, wiffle waffle on this one for us. Like, you can't complain about the gas money. Like,
you're like a coach on the sideline that's like, get back in there.
Yeah. Rob, honey, I'll Venmo you some gas money. Like, no, I want Chad Daybell executed.
My God. I pay my taxes.
I pay them. This is the one thing I want. I don't want roads. I don't care about after school programs.
God.
I would just really like these two people to not share my air.
And also, guys, just before anyone gets too upset, Brittany's totally kidding about roads and health, okay? So we also have some Melanie Gibb news. Well, your, yes, favorite, Brittany. Do. Your favorite.
This woman. Okay, so first of all, I just want to throw it out there. She makes me physically ill on a regular basis. And seeing her more recent interview videos, I can't stand her. Her interviews are the worst because she is the worst. But Mark Means and I agree on this. So here's what happened. Do you remember forever ago, Mark Means wanted Melanie Gibb's life delivered to him?
I was really hoping that it would happen too, but Melanie Gibb was just like, nah, fam, I'm good.
Yeah. So he serves her a subpoena for basically like, I want your email login. I want your phone. I want this. I want your text messages. I want it. I want this and that and that. Like, it was such a list that it almost makes like John Pryor's list for this one look tiny. He wanted so much from Melanie Gibb. And not only did Melanie Gibb do nothing with it, she actually just called Rob Wood and was like, what do I do? And then nothing like ever came of it. And so recently, Mark Means filed a motion saying, can someone tell me why she's just allowed to get away with everything? And I'm like, Mark Means, oh my God, that's like my love language. Why is Melanie Gibb still like able to get away with everything right now? So I guess we'll find out what happens there, but there's now a motion in order to complain as to why Melanie Gibb sucks still.
And nothing's going to come from that either, so.
Probably not.
But Melanie Gibb still sucks.
But, you know, I approve of the motion of, like, can we at least have something on record that we all don't like her still? Yes. But I think there's actually a parallel that we can draw from this, and I think it's important to discuss. And that is, John Pryor has set up the argument that there's been preferential treatment possibly made in these like conversations that happened. You know, why did this employee NS feel the need to step in? And why did the church feel the need to then go and talk to prosecutors? And Mark Means is saying, well, why is Melanie Gibb able to get away with this? So if you remember, that exact same day, the first presidency, so the prophet and then his two counselors, sent out this letter, and they addressed it to basically all leaders, even down to the ward level. And in a roundabout way, that's kind of like to everyone, because each leader then talks to the people underneath them. So on paper, it's just to the leaders, but we all kind of know that that, you know, gets shared, and news organizations picked it up, and that's now public to everyone. And the church does know that when a news statement goes out, it gets shared to more than just, you know, a handful of people. It's newsworthy. So this went out to everyone on the second day of Chad Daybell's original hearing. And I just want to like read this one part of the quote. "We remind leaders and members of a longstanding policy that church leaders should not involve themselves in civil or criminal cases regarding members in their units, quorums, organizations, without first consulting with church legal counsel. However well-intentioned, church leaders sharing information in legal proceedings can sometimes be misinterpreted and even damaging." So they basically were just saying like, listen, guys, if you ever have to go on the stand, come talk to us first. Give us a heads up. We will talk with church attorneys. We will help you, right? And technically, yes, this has been a policy for quite some time. But it was interesting that they chose to bring it up on day two of this hearing when lots of members are watching. And I'm sure lots of the witnesses on the list, they're Mormon. And so having this come out at that time, it's not a good look, right? It's just not a good look.
I just can't believe that it's not strategic. Like, again, Occam's razor, right? Like, what happens? You have, it's the thing that's most likely to be true. And day two of one of the biggest events in modern LDS history, right? Because of all of the players and whatnot, Chad Daybell and everyone, like, I just cannot believe that that was not a strategic move.
I wouldn't call it like the largest Mormon event, but I would say it's definitely the biggest court case that's ever happened involving Mormon theology. So and I don't see that getting, I don't see anything else outshining this case in terms of Mormon theology involved in a criminal case that's now gone to death penalty.
Yeah.
This is huge. And they could have picked any other time to share this. They could have picked after when things kind of died down a little bit. That didn't happen. And Mark Means obviously was not a fan of that, because yet again, he and John Pryor feel that it's like, dude, they're stepping on this case. They're getting in the way again. And so his quote, Mark Means said, "By way of issuing this correspondence on the second day of a preliminary hearing, the LDS Church has told approximately 26% of the residents of the state of Idaho to contact church legal counsel to enter into a code of silence and to only discuss their potential knowledge of this case and any other civil or criminal case after filtering said knowledge through the lens that is the LDS Church. These LDS residents make up possible jury pool members, witnesses, judges, prosecutors, police officers, detectives, deputies, police chiefs and captains, and other elected and non-elected officials throughout the state of Idaho." So, to Mark Mean's point, to John Pryor's point, their number one concern here is, why are we letting another organization get involved in any way? Is it tainting this case in any possible manner? Is it preventing us from making this entirely fair because of the circumstances that await later on?
And you can't disagree with that. Like, no, I can't disagree with that.
They're just trying to be fair about this. And you would want the same level of protection from your attorney. Mm-hmm. You would want your attorney to say, like, wait a minute, we can't have outside influences here. Mm-hmm. Like, your life is on the line. We have to make sure that this is handled in a way that there's not a bias. There's not people working against your failure or success or however you want to look at this.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I would like to go back really quickly and just kind of circle back to what I said. Like, I called it an LDS event. I just want to make sure that everyone's aware that I'm not calling this like an LDS event. Like, this is LDS. Like, what Lori and Chad did was, you know, reprehensible. It had nothing really to do with LDS per se. It had to do with their own, you know, with Chad's loin fire and all this other shit. But what I mean by that is I'm 36 years old, guys, and I don't recall in my lifetime any other event that has called in LDS or Mormon theology, anything like that. Right. That's more what I'm referring to when I say that is, did the Susan Powell case have that level of draw in by the church? Yeah, I was too young to really like remember that, or I wasn't following it. But yeah, like that's what I mean when I say LDS event. Not that like, hey, the LDS church did this. It's, you know, I've never heard or seen another case that had that much to do with the LDS church where everybody's going through the theology. Could it have been this? What is the basis of their beliefs? And is this why they did it? Like, it's just crazy to me. So that's what I meant by that.
There's so much that involves, like, that's the thing that we can all agree on. Everyone can agree on this, whether you are currently Mormon and active and believing, or ex-Mormon, but still respectful, or, you know, completely on the outside. You've never had any experience with the Mormon church whatsoever. We can all agree that Chad and Lori manipulated beliefs and doctrines to fit their will. Everyone agrees on this. There's no sides to take. We all agree that Lori and Chad suck. We all know that.
Yes.
The problem that Mark Means and John Pryor are bringing up is that there's a chance that there's bias here. And keep in mind, we don't want bias. We don't want any reason for Chad or Lori to be like, everyone was just biased and now we need a mistrial.
Yeah.
You want them to cross all of their T's and dot all of their I's and make sure there isn't anything here that's even a little bit of a gray area. Absolutely. We want everything above board.
Absolutely. And I would be saying the same thing regardless of what religion was in the crosshairs between them, right? Like whether they were Wicca or Zen Buddhist or Catholic or Methodist, like whatever religion it is, I don't care. It just, we cannot have a bias.
We can't have something that results in a mistrial. We can't, to everyone's point of how expensive this is getting, imagine all of this work being for nothing.
And just to back up and kind of do like an overview of the situation, guys, especially with the clinician and all of that mess, because I know it's really hard to set aside bias. Trust me, I do. It's really hard. I also want to see Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell spend every breath that they take until their dying day in prison. I really do. And Brittany's over here just wanting them to be drawn and quartered.
Is that too much to ask for? Like, I believe in miracles.
But you know, based on conversations that I'm seeing all across social media, it's really hard for others as well. I implore you to think about this in a different way. Of those of you who think that, you know, the church potentially releasing that letter, day two of Chad Daybell's preliminary hearing, that it wasn't that big of a deal. Let's say that you're working for a large corporation.
Okay.
The corporation has in-house counsel, as they all do, right?
Okay.
So you've been charged with a crime and you are on trial for it. You're going to trial. You're heading to trial.
Not ideal, but okay.
Right? You have an attorney and your coworkers are going to be called as witnesses. But the corporation sends out a memo saying, don't talk to police or go to court without talking to our attorney first.
Okay, not ideal.
Yeah. Your supervisor then mentions that you should consider switching to using the corporation's attorney. That attorney isn't even licensed to help you, doesn't tell you that they can't help you, but listens and gets all of the juicy details. Yeah. The corporation's attorney then calls the prosecutor who's going to try you, who's working to charge you, and tells them everything that transpired. It looks wrong. I mean, it looks like they're working to cover their ass, and it looks like they've taken sides, even though you were led to believe that they were on yours. And I'm not saying that that is exactly what happened here. You know what? It may have not even happened at all. Like, maybe
that's
this is just a ploy. Like, maybe this didn't even happen at all, and this is just a ploy from Mark Means to delay the inevitable.
Or even Lori. Lori could have lied and manipulated him, too.
Yeah, exactly. This could all be Lori's. Her lying, she's a great liar, so it could be all Lori. We don't know, but worst case scenario, it is suspect as hell.
And like, it's worth investigating.
At best case scenario, it's worth investigating.
Yes.
Like, to the fullest extent. Yeah, with every resource available, it's worth investigating regardless. Again, all of this happened allegedly, and it may have not happened at all, but we need to figure out and take a peek under the hood.
Agreed. Well, Speaking of taking a peek under the hood.
Oh, God.
So, going back to what we kind of teased at the start of this episode, we have intercepted a love letter from Chad to Lori. It's fake. It's just a joke. But we did intercept it. And Robin, have you seen it yet? Have you read it over?
I have not, guys. I'm going to be reading this for the first time as well.
Okay. Well, I did take a peek at it because I wrote it. And yeah, I think you're going to like what you see. And hopefully we keep intercepting more of these, honestly.
Yeah.
We might be able to learn a little bit as to what's going on behind the scenes.
I'd love to know your thoughts and opinions on it.
All right. Well, here we go.
So I'm going to read to you the letter that Chad Daybell wrote Lori from jail that we intercepted. My dear sweet forever goddess lover, it's me, James. I'm sorry it's been so long since my last letter to you, but I know how it feels to wait for something to read. Like in the Harry Potter series, when it took 3 years after Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire for, for Jake Rowling to release Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. One day, I'm going to bring Rowling to Spring Creek Book Company and start making us tens of hundreds of dollars. Elena, I have been working tirelessly to to penetrate your thick veil. The evil forces of Fremont County and beyond will never stand between our love for each other. You truly have changed my life forever, just not in a way I had foreseen. God truly works in mysterious ways. I feel your spirit with me more and more, which is why I've had to start buying pillow stuffing from other inmates. But they insist that I don't need to pay with cash. The guys here have been really friendly. They even gave me a cool nickname, Backroom Baller. I hope you've been making friends too and continuing our mission to save souls and defeat the forces of darkness. I am proud to share that John Pryor has been very receptive to all of my teachings, and he is even beginning to read some of my books. He still has a long way to go on the trust scale, but the spirit has made it clear to me with visions of John as my father when you and I were living in Jerusalem. He's really the best dad, and I keep accidentally calling him Abba. That means father in Hebrew, which is the language we spoke back in that lifetime. 99% of people don't realize I've been 100% Jewish before. It's been oh so long since I've been able to pet your beautiful hair. I think of it every time I peel back the lid of my cup of noodles. The broth smells as rich as your spirit, coats my whole mouth, and fills me with fire. Lori, I hope you'll agree to join me for a spiritual conjugal visit when you receive this letter. We might be physically apart from each other, but our spirits can wrap around each other and fit together as tight as Tetris every night. My loins are nothing but embers for you. Warmly, Chad.
Wow. They really miss each other, don't they?
Oh, man. Well, yet to be determined if Lori misses him.
That's fair. I'll let you know if I see anything come through from Lori back to Chad.
Yeah. I can't wait to read her reply. I'm wondering how she's going to take that.
I mean, it's a lot, but, you know, I'm happy for him. It sounds like he's doing okay, I guess, you know?
I mean, he's able to buy pillow stuffing, so that's a plus, right?
That's true. I am a little bit concerned that he might not be aware of prison currency just yet.
Oh, well, Idaho doesn't really seem to have their shit together on keeping a tab on inmates, so...
This is fair.
So that's it for today, guys. We wanted to discuss that news dump because this could prove to be very, very messy, if not just very, very entertaining while it happens, right?
At a minimum. I'm all for that.
Either way, we may win, you know? It's a win-win for us as far as watching this and watching it go through the process.
Agreed.
Check us out at wesawthedevil.com. Follow us on all social media. If you're loving the show, become a patron. Join our Patreon-only Facebook group and our Discord. Come chat with us, get to know us, and help us pick future cases that we cover. Until next crime.